Please rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Wheelock, Judge Sleater, Judge Schmidt, the Honorable Sarah I. Wheelock presiding.
Good morning. Please sit. Thank you, Marshall. So the Minnesota Court of Appeals is in session, and as noted, I'm here, Sarah Wheelock, with Judges Sleater and Judge Schmidt. Today is Thursday, February 29th, and we have four cases scheduled for oral argument today. Oral arguments are recorded by the court, and there will be an audio recording available within 24 hours on our website. With that, please call the first case.
Now calling A23-1108. Sandra Weiss, appellant versus Alan M. Powell, respondent.
Counsel, as you probably know, you'll each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes. There's a timer on the podium in the center and a lever that will allow you to adjust that up and down. At the beginning of your argument, please identify yourself and also identify who your client is. That will allow us to have a good record for the audio recording. And let us know if there is any need for pronunciation. We'll resume now on the record. And as noted, just please introduce yourself, identify your client, let us know if there's any pronunciations or pronouns that we should use, and counsel for appellant. You can begin when you're ready, so feel free to adjust the podium. There are 15 minutes on the clock.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ellen Aarons Wickham, and I'm here today on behalf of appellate Sandra Weiss. We are here today because the district court held that the mediator's interpretation of a contract controlled, which was in direct contradiction to the plain terms of the contract. As a result, Ms. Weiss is now ordered to sign a contract that she did not agree to. That is not how the law or our justice system works, and we ask this court to reverse the district court's decision. I want to start by discussing the provision that allows the mediator to resolve disputes. Both the district court and Mr. Powell have interpreted that provision to say that the power of the mediator is unlimited and that that power is binding, and neither of those things are true. The power to resolve the disputes is not unlimited under the plain language of that provision. There is nothing in that statement that says that the mediator is allowed to add terms to the contract, and that is what happened here. It is not within the scope of her authority.
Can I inquire on that, counsel?
Yes.
I understood the a little something different. You may correct me if I'm wrong, that in fact the mediated agreement was, I think the judge used the phrase non-integrated, and it was never intended to be the complete document, which is why twice the parties were then attempting to create a document that fully covers all the terms. So what you just said is that she's changing terms, but isn't that, it's adding terms, but that was the intent of the parties, right? In other words, it was never intended that first document was the complete, from beginning to end, entire agreement.
I agree that it was never intended to be the complete entire agreement. That's clear on the face of the document, and it's not the final settlement agreement that resolves this matter, right, which is why we're here today. But when the parties contemplated entering into a settlement agreement, it was based on that memorandum of agreement. And so it is adding a material term when the mediator adds a term to what is already there.
I'm still not quite getting the distinction, though, because you were going to be adding language, which means you're adding terms, right, in a settlement agreement. So maybe I'll just ask it more directly. What part of the original mediation agreement was the term she added contrary to it?
It was the very first paragraph, or I'm sorry, the third, very first sentence of the third paragraph where it says that there's full confidentiality of the settlement terms only. She expanded that provision twice.
Now, how do we know that she's expanding that provision versus any other provision? And I was later on, I don't have the phrase right in front of me, but the language that there shall be no other comment, I think, phrase. Couldn't it have been expanding that, which the parties, that language by itself suggests no comment, which means no writing, no saying. Do you follow my question?
I do. How
can we pick one part and say, well, she's expanding that, but she's not expanding that, rather than looking at it in total, and she's clarifying what the parties had intended.
Right. So that was Mr. Powell's argument here before the court, that there were two separate confidentiality agreements, and that that was waived because it wasn't raised in that format before the district court. But specific to if it wasn't raised, what we're talking about, and I apologize in advance, I have to talk around this a little bit because some of these sentences are confidential and haven't been in a public district court order, but in between the first sentence that we talked about and the third sentence that you identified is a second sentence, and that discusses a confidential term of the settlement agreement. And so when you read it together, that third sentence that says no further comment is still related to the terms of the settlement agreement. It is not related to the full confidentiality of the case.
But again, isn't that what the mediator then was tasked to do by the parties, is explain in better detail, because just what you just said does suggest some ambiguity just by looking at that. So hence, the parties agreed when that happens, that's a dispute, you mediator resolve it, that's what she did. How does that go beyond? That's the part I'm not quite getting.
Sure. So I think there's a difference here in the dispute. I think what we typically see with those provisions is disputes about the payment is X amount of dollars. I want to send it via check. You say it has to be sent via certified mail. I want to write a check. You say it has to be a wire so that I see the money in my account. Those are not material terms of the settlement because it doesn't change the actual payment amount. This is a material term. And the reason that we know that is because Mr. Powell submitted an affidavit saying that this was really important to him. And it was incumbent upon him as a party to this case to make sure that agreement made it into the to the memorandum of agreement. There's a case that I found that is not cited in my brief, so I'm happy to give you the citation. It's Jurdle versus Golden Nuggets, 672 Northwest 2nd, 578. It's from this court in 2003. In that situation, a farmer was leasing land. So they had a landlord-tenant agreement governed by a lease. The farmer thought that the landlord should be in charge of repairing a ditch wall if there's excess rain. The lease was silent on that term. And there, the farmer who leased the land knew that that repair issue might arise. He knew that landlords typically do not provide that service as part of leased farmland. And this court held it was incumbent on the farmer to require that the landlord be responsible for the repairs. And this court said, quote, he did not do so, and he may not now go outside the unambiguous terms of the written lease to imply a duty for which the parties did not bargain. And I think this is similar here because the contract is silent on the term of full confidentiality.
Just one follow-up question. Thank you for your answer. Isn't the distinction from kind of what we'll call the traditional contract law and interpretation, such as what you're bringing here, and perhaps unlike that case itself or most typical cases that talk about material versus immaterial changes, is here the parties explicitly desired the mediator to resolve all disputes. And that I read to mean both material and immaterial, minor versus major. Isn't that a distinction from that body of law where other than minor that are not material type of disputes, unless you contract for someone to resolve it, the words are what the words are?
Right. I think that as an initial matter, what is the same about this is contract interpretation and whether the agreement is ambiguous or not. Had this been a settlement agreement that disposed of the case, the parties could have filed a breach of contract case in an entirely new matter, which was more like the procedural posture in Dreidel. In terms of the mediator being entitled to resolve all disputes, that power is not limitless. And I think an analogy here is arbitration provisions. Under Minnesota law, as we all know, it's very difficult to vacate an arbitration award. but it's not impossible. And one of the statutory reasons, both in federal and Minnesota's case law, is that the mediator exceeded their authority based on the contract, and that's what happened here.
Thank you.
But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the agreement that the mediator would resolve any disputes about the terms, how does that have interplay with your argument on the mistake of fact and the mistake, the unilateral mistake argument?
I consider it separate. I think rescission is a separate alternative argument that's based just on Mr. Powell's misrepresentation when he entered into the contract, as we know based on the affidavit that he filed afterwards.
Thank you.
With the, it seems, following up on that too, of the mediator, the parties provided that the mediator would provide a final resolution on disagreement, mm-hmm, of whatever the terms are. And so in this case, they gave the mediator that power. And in the July 2022 first time going to the court saying, hey, this is a problem, or to the mediator, excuse me, saying this is a problem, the mediator resolved it, the court said, it's fine. It isn't the mediator's power to resolve this kind of law of the case at this point, because that wasn't appealed before, that the mediator resolved that prior dispute.
I don't think it is, and here's why. We did not appeal from the July order, as the court well knows. And the reason for that is that the way that the district court entered its order, it quoted the mediator's interpretation and said, this is, you have to enter into a contract that looks like this. And what Ms. Weiss proposed was a contract that looked like that. And the reason that we know that is because we literally quoted the mediator's email, and that's what we proposed to Mr. Powell. The difference between July 22 and the 2023 order is the mediator's second interpretation, where she went even beyond what happened in 2022 to say, not only do I agree with my first statement, now I'm adding this additional provision.
Okay.
I also, just following up on your question, Judge Schmidt, the provision that allows the mediator to resolve disputes does not say that it's binding. And I understand that the district court found that. And the parties specifically excluded that word, binding, as when they were drafting the memorandum of agreement. This is in the record at my colleague Mr. Primo's declaration, which is index number 169, at paragraph 11. The initial draft of the mediator's resolution of disputes said that the mediator's decision would be binding. The mediator and my former colleague, Mr. Primo, had a conversation. She said that I don't want it to be binding. Mr. Primo agreed on behalf of Mr. Weiss. The mediator said, Mr. Powell's counsel will circulate the next version of the agreement with the binding provision removed. My colleague agreed to that. And the next draft that Mr. Powell's counsel circulated was consistent with this. The language of the mediator's resolution being binding was omitted. And that's how we know what the parties intended with that provision.
But counsel, what's it mean to resolve if it's not resolved, which can't happen unless it's binding?
I'm sorry, could you ask your question again?
Yeah, doesn't resolving a dispute means ending it. So whether you had the word binding or not, the parties agreed that the mediator shall resolve, which means to end it. How can that be interpreted any other way than it's binding on the parties, whether you use the word binding or not?
I think it reserved to the parties the ability to go to the district court for a contract interpretation on the plain language of the agreement.
But wouldn't the parties have had to add that language? Otherwise, resolved doesn't mean resolved. It means sort of maybe resolved for now, subject to going to district court.
I understand the question. I think it's different, like we talked about earlier, with material terms versus non-material terms. We can resolve whether the payment has to be sent via FedEx or via wire. We cannot resolve whether the parties agreed to a contract or agreed to a term that's not in the contract. We cannot force, I don't think the law allows us to force someone to sign a contract that they did not agree to.
But then that becomes circular, but the mediator said your client did. In other words, that was the whole point, isn't it, of, again, the outline, essentially, let's call it the first mediated agreement, while you're trying to put all the details together, but we hand over to the mediator to resolve any disputes about what the party's intention was. Isn't that, in the land of mediation and these sorts of documents, the purpose of having the mediator resolve disputes?
Again, the purpose of having the mediator resolve this disputes is to get this memorandum agreement into a final written settlement agreement that the parties can take to the court. Or not, I guess in this case, they don't have to take it to the court, but use to dismiss the case. And when the parties don't agree on material term because it's not in the contract, the mediator can't add a term. If you think about whether this is not part of the settlement agreement at all, but if there was a $1 million payment owed to Ms. Weiss, and the mediator and Ms. Weiss said, that's not right, it's $1.5 million. And then the mediator was like, oh yeah, it's $1.5. That's a huge difference. And I would just also like to note for the record, that's not a term of the settlement agreement. If you look at the financial provisions, which are confidential, Ms. Weiss does not get one penny.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you have any cases you can point us to that talk about the inclusion or exclusion of the word binding in an agreement like this?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And just as a final note, I want to note, as I stated with respect to the financial provisions, Ms. Weiss has no interest in publicizing Mr. Powell's name. She submitted a declaration to this effect. It's uncontroverted. There's no evidence in the record that Ms. Weiss seeks to publicize Mr. Powell's name or anything related to him. There is evidence in the record that's to the contrary, which is the financial provisions. And unless the court has further questions, I'll take my seat.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll turn to counsel for respondent next. Again, feel free to adjust the podium as needed. We have 15 minutes on the clock, and you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Megan Cooper, and I represent the respondent, Ellen Powell. In this case, the district court and the mediator correctly held that the terms of the mediated settlement agreement and the intention and spirit of the mediation, which the mediator was allowed to reference when making these final decisions, held that there was full confidentiality in this case. And there's multiple terms of the agreement that indicate that. The first one is the one that's been discussed that says there's full confidentiality of the settlement terms. Counsel misspoke when the counsel said settlement terms only, because it doesn't say that.
But it doesn't have the word only in the language that you're quoting.
It doesn't say only, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, so it doesn't say full confidentiality of the terms only of the, sorry, full confidentiality only of the terms of the settlement, right? So
yes.
Doesn't that actually lead us to believe that, in fact, the confidentiality was limited?
There's nothing limiting in it, no. And, in fact, the other provision in there, which there's another term in between talking about strict compliance, and then it talks about no further remark or comment. And then there's the third provision, and when you take them all together, indicate full confidentiality is the provision with the mediator, giving her the ability to make a final resolution, which final is clearly the end, and she doesn't have to limit it to the terms. It specifically says in there that she can base it upon the conversations she had with the party or the spirit of the conversations she had with the party. So all of this, combined with her comments, clearly indicate that full confidentiality is what is agreed to here. And counsel's, Ms. Weiss's whole argument stems on the fact that there's this supposed conflict. And there's not a conflict because the word only isn't there. It just says the terms of the settlement agreement are confidential, which no one disputes. Sure, they are, but it doesn't say only. And so there's no conflict with what the mediator decided with that provision. If there's no conflict, her whole argument must fail. The mediator has the ability to make these decisions. It doesn't conflict with any provision. And because she was within her authority as given by the parties in this agreement, she has the ability to make the final determination, here she made the final determination, and that's full confidentiality. And doesn't conflict with this. And so the district court found that that's binding here. And in fact, he found that, Judge Klein found that twice, because in the July of 2022, he actually did, Judge Klein made a ruling with respect to confidentiality. He ruled that there was full confidentiality other than Ms. Weiss could discuss with advocacy groups. That's all he said. There's a holding in that 2022. It doesn't say, and you can write a book, or you can make other writings, or you can do other things. It says it's fully confidential. And that wasn't appealed. And so that is the law of the case, that Judge Klein ruled that there's full confidentiality other than these discussions with advocacy groups. So,
Ms. Cooper, so if the first email was intended to clarify the breadth of the confidentiality, and that first email allows, it looks like, for publication, as long as if using names, professions, either indirectly, it prohibits publication if using names, professions, or either directly or innuendo. So that email suggests that the party's intent was to allow publication, but to keep the names confidential. Then the subsequent email seems to be inconsistent and say no publication at all.
Well, and I can explain that, Judge. The first email, when we were having that discussion, we were specifically talking about her diary. And so Mr. Primo and I had been debating, and there was multiple calls to the mediator, and we were talking about what can be done with her diary. And so I think the mediator was trying to address what we were asking at that time, which was about her diary, which is why when the second dispute arose about a book, I went back to the mediator so she could we could make sure that all interpretations of what she was saying were in the full picture. And that's why she was specifically asked, you know, what you were talking about with the diary, does that apply here, or is it different if we're talking about writing a book? And she clarified. And that's why the second email is important, and it doesn't conflict because she was looking at the whole picture then.
But if the purpose of the mediator's follow-up resolution, wouldn't it be irrelevant what the email's asking her? It's what her words are, because now that's the words of the parties in terms of their intentions. And then when she's asked again, it does say something different, even though perhaps you're right, the context. But all we look at and all the district court should look at and what the parties look at is, mediator, you resolve it. Means she uses the words that fits the intent of the parties. Doesn't that become the agreement then of the parties?
Well, it becomes the final resolution. But again, I don't think they conflict, because when she was specifically asked, look, what do you do in this situation? She clarified about writing a book.
But would you agree, at least then on the first email, when she uses the word publishing writings, that leaves the whole world open of the type of writings, not just a diary?
It was unclear. I agree. That the first time it was unclear.
What's unclear about it?
If she was talking about the diary, if she was talking about any and all writing, what writing she was referring to was ambiguous. And so then we went back.
We start with an ambiguous mediation agreement and a second ambiguous answer by the mediators to resolve the dispute, so then we had to get to a third document.
Well,
and that becomes the unambiguous one, not the middle one?
That's what happened, yes.
Was that what you meant by ambiguous, that her explanation on the first email was ambiguous as it relates to writings?
Yes. It wasn't clear what writing she was referring to, which is why any dispute was supposed to go to her. We asked her. She clarified that it was not writing a book. And she even put in her second explanation that she was trying to give Ms. Weiss some room to do some therapeutic work, which is why she used that language. And in terms of writing a book, that was violating the spirit and intention of what the parties agreed to at the mediation. So I think the mediator really clarified what she was doing when she talked about writings. I don't see that there's a conflict between the two. A clarification.
Thank you.
Before we leave the topic of ambiguity, is it your position that the original, the memorandum of agreement is or is not ambiguous?
There is ambiguity.
Okay, and what is it?
What is the ambiguity? It never was intended to be the final. and it was always intended to incorporate a number of terms. And so there's ambiguity as to what are the details of those terms. And it, when we drafted it, we didn't think so, but it's turned out what was the positions the parties could take with respect to confidentiality isn't as clear now we're going back in here as we thought it was when we drafted it. That's ambiguous.
Would you agree that the confidentiality provision or provisions is a material term for both parties?
Yes. I think that was the primary focus of the mediation is confidentiality and the importance. So yes, I'd agree with that.
If we disagree that the mediator has carte blanche authority to just resolve these disputes, is that the end of this case, or is there a different way to get there?
I think there's a different way to get there because Judge Klein ruled, and it's unappealed, that it's full confidentiality other than his language in his 2022 order is it's fully confidential except for she can talk to advocacy groups. And he uses the word discuss, not write, in his order. And that is the law of the case, and I think that resolves it even if we take out this issue with the mediator because he ruled and it's not appealed.
It also seems like in the order that is on appeal right now, the district court judge resolved this dispute in sort of two key sentences. The first is the mediator decided this, and that's binding. And the second is the terms of the settlement agreement, separate from that, is what it seems to me. In addition to the terms of the settlement agreement, any allegations must remain confidential. So is that the judge going beyond and doing their own interpretation of the terms of the settlement agreement beyond what the mediator had decided?
I think so. And counsel is incorrect that the second sentence about no remark wasn't argued before the district court because it's in Mr. Powell's brief, page 12. It was argued, the phrasing of it is slightly different, but it's the same argument. And that was argued to Judge Klein, and it was presented to him, like, look, there's full confidentiality. That's what we intended by this no comment or remark provision. And so, yes, I agree that he's finding that these, when you take all these provisions and you read the document as a whole, it requires full confidentiality. I think he found that in both orders, just one of them wasn't appealed. So, and I guess if there's no other questions, I think I'll just conclude that,
Well, counsel, I would ask you, so it says no further comment or remark shall be made by any party or their representative. And I think it's not unreasonable to read that as referring specifically to the terms of the settlement, like how much money was going to be paid, to whom it was going to be paid, et cetera, and is limited. But it seems like it's your position that it was as to anything and everything.
Yes, and that's what was discussed and negotiated. That was the position we discussed with the mediator, and that was what that provision meant when we were putting it in there, is that everything was to be fully confidential, and the mediators confirmed that. That's what she recalls everyone discussing. That's what that was intended to do. And so just because I can see what you mean, that it could be interpreted, although there is a sentence in between that's about something else, but it could be interpreted that way, but that's not why it was put in there. That's not what the mediator says it was intended to do. It was intended to say full confidentiality, and it can be interpreted that way. And I guess that's what brings me back to your earlier question, is there ambiguity? And yes, because there's these various interpretations, but it doesn't mean it couldn't be read the way it was intended for full confidentiality.
But then why include the phrase of the terms of the settlement?
Mm-hmm. It's there. So it was a very contentious multi-day. And we argued about almost every word that's in here. And so things that were important to different parties got in there different ways. And so one party asked for one thing and one party asked for another one, and it got put in there that way because of it was contentious, and that's how the language developed the way it did. But that didn't mean that it wasn't always intended and contemplated full confidentiality.
After that first clause about full confidentiality of the terms of the settlement, there's a comma then including, and it references a letter. Was that letter a term of the settlement agreement, or was that out? Okay, so the letter itself was a term of the settlement agreement, or is the letter outside of the term of the settlement agreement?
The requirement that a letter exist was a term of the settlement agreement. The letter, the actual letter isn't part of the agreement itself, but the fact that it be written and that it be have certain things and that it do certain things was. And so the existence of that letter is part of what prompted that first phrase, confidentiality of the settlement terms, and that kind of involved what was involved in the, inside that letter in an effort to keep that specifically confidential because there was multiple concerns, but very different concerns from each side about that letter. And then the second sentence was to address the whole.
So it seems that sort of cuts both ways because you have the confidentiality of the terms of the settlement agreement and then you have including this letter. And so is that including restrictive to the letter? And what we're talking about is the terms of the settlement agreement. Or is the letter, is the including meaning, no, it's broader than just the terms?
I'm sorry, I'm not going to follow your question. Can we try it again?
Yeah, so, and I appreciate that. Thank you, because that wasn't entirely clear. But the idea is that you have the word including here, right? And then you have the first clause is about the terms of the settlement agreement.
Yes.
And so that, if we read it very narrowly, is just the terms of the settlement agreement, not the incident itself, not the entire world outside of this terms of the settlement agreement.
Right.
Then you have the word including, and it references a letter. And so my question sort of gets to that including, is that saying, all right, it's confidential to the terms of the settlement agreement and those terms and to this particular letter. And those are the two things that we're looking at, and that's it. Or is it broader than that? And that was where my initial question was, is this letter, does that fall outside of those terms? Because if it does, then maybe that term is broader than just the terms of the settlement agreement.
It would suit my argument better if I said that it was your second choice, but I really think it intended to be the first choice when we wrote it, is that we were two provisions. This first one was intended to address the terms of the settlement agreement because there was concerns and intended to address the letter. The second one was intended to talk about the confidentiality that we agreed on as a whole. I wish I could say that we were trying to do your second choice, but I don't think that's what happened.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Counsel, this sentence that Judge Schmidt is referencing, it actually also has a third portion before the semicolon. It seems to me that if we're reading and we're interpreting the sentence of this contract in its full extent, that we're talking about the terms only, the terms of the settlement agreement, and then we're giving examples of things that are terms of the settlement agreement, one of which was the letter, and then there's a second line that I will just reference as another requirement of the terms. Why can't we read it to be limited to the terms if those are the examples that are given immediately afterwards?
Well, if you're looking just at the terms of the settlement agreement, again, I would submit to you that there was that second sentence in there that comes as a separate sentence when there's another term in between about strict compliance and materiality, and then there's another sentence after it that was intended to generate full confidentiality. And it says, no comment or remark. A book is a comment or remark. So that sentence, if you accept the appellant's interpretation, that sentence is rendered meaningless and null and void. And every sentence in here should be given meaning, including that one.
Okay. Thank you. And your time is up. So we'll turn back to counsel for appellant for the 5 minutes you have for rebuttal. We'll reset the clock. And you can begin when you are ready.
I think I want to address two arguments here on rebuttal unless the court has further questions. The first is that Ms. Cooper stated that when the 2022 issue arose, that was only in the context of Ms. Weiss's diaries. She did not provide a citation to the record because there isn't one. I've asked Mr. Powell's counsel to substantiate that position, and I was not provided that information prior to the district court ruling in 2023, and it's not in the record before the court. The second thing I want to address is that Mr. Cooper's argument is now different in that the agreement was ambiguous. And that's a different situation. Under the VoiceStream case, when a settlement agreement is found to be ambiguous, the district court is required to hold a hearing. So if that's Mr. Powell's position now, we've all been kind of playing a different game. I would also note that Mr. Powell did not argue before the district court that the agreement was ambiguous. The references to Mr. Powell's brief are index numbers 104 and 171 in the district court. In terms of the memorandum of agreement and it being a contentious day, as the court is aware, I was not involved. However, the parties agreed that the mediation took place on February 2nd, and the memorandum of agreement was signed on February 8th. So it is not correct to say that each word was discussed in that room. And the reason that we know that is because we have the declaration of Mr. Primo dated January 31st, 2023, index number 169, paragraph 6 through 10. In that declaration, Mr. Primo, who was present and was involved in these initial emails establishing the memorandum of agreement, notes that the mediator circulated a draft on February 2nd that said full confidentiality. My former colleague, Mr. Primo, added the phrase of the terms of settlement. So full confidentiality stayed with the limiting provision that Judge Schmidt identified. Mr. Powell had many, many issues with the draft that Mr. Primo provided on that day, but not one of them in a pretty long email was addressed to the confidentiality. And the mediator, who is, I believe, signed the memorandum of agreement also, did not object to that limitation on the full confidentiality of the terms. So if we're going to say that the contract is ambiguous, then we need to look at the facts.
And your position is that that last sentence about no further comment is only about the terms of the settlement agreement?
Yes, and I think that a further support of that is that in the first sentence it says the parties can only talk about, say that a settlement was reached, and then the next, there's the intervening confidential term, no further comment can be made. That's very typical in settlement agreements for the parties to be able to say there is a resolution and that's it, and not talk about any of the terms. I think in some cases they can't even talk about whether they're happy with it or not. They just say it's over.
So why wouldn't that last phrase, if it's set up as parties, this is to, you can say there's a settlement, and then the final phrase is no further comment, why wouldn't that expand to be not just the terms but about everything?
I think because the first sentence in that paragraph is that there's confidentiality of the terms only, so there's no further comment other than the resolution about the terms, that the resolution exists.
Counsel, can I expand on that? I saw it in the briefs, too, that it's limited only to the settlement terms, but doesn't that ultimately become, again, circular because not all the terms are identified, so when we can't resolve what those are, this is back to the same old question, we go to the mediator to resolve them, and so what the mediator did is resolve what the parties intended by these terms. So doesn't that just become so then it becomes the same answer, whether it's limited to the terms. The terms include that she cannot publish. Well, then that's the settlement term. You see what I'm saying? Unless we ignore the mediator, then the settlement terms were never complete at the beginning. Now we've added in all the blank spots.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the settlement terms that remain confidential.
Right. The way the memorandum of agreement is written, it does not allow for the parties to agree to additional material terms. It does allow them to enter into another contract. And I know you feel like this is the same old question, and I'm giving you the same old answer. So
you're
might
passionate
just have
about
to,
it. I appreciate that. You're right.
We might just be where we are on that. But I think in my experience, it's very typical for the parties to agree to enter another settlement or enter into a final settlement agreement. There are some you have to include those non-material terms. Some of them are required by law in the employment context, right? The rescission and the you're not waiving your EEOC rights, that sort of thing. And the way the memorandum of agreement is written is not say, like, this is part one of a settlement agreement and then we're going to agree to new terms. Because if that was true, what would be the point of having the memorandum of agreement in the first place? This is not the only case, I will just note, where I have wanted to say that a mediation should not be considered resolved until the mediation isn't over, until the signed settlement agreement is done. Then the parties can go home. But of course, hindsight is 20/20.
I have one more question, if I may.
Yes.
Did the parties have any, I didn't see it in the record, but in the memorandum of understanding, was there any out to say, if we can't finalize these material terms, here's how we say, all right, this is off and we're going forward?
No, there's no provision in the memorandum of agreement, but I would say that there is an out in contract law, which is rescission based on Mr. Powell's misrepresentation. So, and I think that's true of any contract, right? You can contract for certain provisions and the contract law of the state you're in still applies.
What was the misrepresentation?
Mr. Powell agreed to be bound by the confidentiality of the settlement terms and then later submitted an affidavit saying he never intended to be bound by that. He always intended to be bound by full confidentiality.
Okay.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you.
Thank you.
To both counsel for the argument today and for the briefs that were submitted. They're very helpful. And so the case is submitted and we'll issue an opinion in the required statutory time frame. Okay. And take a moment to switch tables and bring the next case up.